Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
And the Rainbow Times has not been the only potential hate crime victim. The Department of Homeland Security is now looking into a cyber attack against Saturday Night Live actress Leslie Jones. Hackers put up what appeared to be explicit photos of Jones and her driver's license and passport photos, all of this on her personal website. Joining us to talk about this and other technology news from this week is the technology writer for the business section of the Boston Globe, Hiawatha Bray. Hi, Hiawatha.
Hello there.
So Jones, Leslie Jones, was battling internet trolls for the past month after her Ghostbusters interview. Does law enforcement have a strong track record in terms of finding out who might be committing these types of crimes?
Well, it's pretty iffy. I mean, it's not really clear how they can track this person down, but it is possible, depending on whether or not they left any traces, like IP addresses from which they might have launched the attack, or any kind of hints that might point in some direction, you know, like maybe even words or terms or something that they might have used in some other context. It's possible, but it's by no means certain that they'll be able to track these people down.
What about the motivation here? I mean, this was clearly an attempt to publicly humiliate. And
I would think so.
Right. And we've seen these before. Sony Pictures hack in 2014, Ashley Madison hack last summer. And you know,
but these are all very different. I think they're very different. You're combining a bunch of different things. The Sony hack is still largely believed to have been undertaken by the government of North Korea or somebody connected with them. Then there are others that are things like this, which just appear to have probably been just some individual or group of individuals who wanted to humiliate somebody.
But I want to talk.
I mean, they're very different.
But I want to talk about targeting here, because, and what I was getting to was that there are data from the Verizon data breach investigations report suggesting in 2016 suggesting that 89% of all of these breaches that it analyzed anyway had some sort of financial or espionage motive. So what I'm wondering here, and that's why I brought up Sony and Ashley Madison, is do you think we're going to see these very targeted, do people not have to worry about widespread hacking as much as they might have to worry about somebody deliberately targeting them or an organization for a personal reason?
Why not worry about both? Because both things are quite possibly going to happen. Of course, most of this is now financial. Back when I first started covering this industry, people who did this were mostly bored teenagers who were trying to make a name for themselves. Nowadays, these are mostly being carried out by international crime rings or by governments that are trying to carry out attacks for intelligence gathering purposes, or even sometimes to undermine possibly a country that they have problems with. That's going to be normal. That has become the new normal. The United States carries out cyber attacks against other countries. And so other countries are going to do it to us. And criminal gangs do it. And this is just part of the world we live in, and it is just going to keep happening.
But this was personally motivated. I'm talking about the Leslie Jones attack.
Way, yes.
Is this a hate crime? And do you think technology companies or law enforcement, I mean, who's thinking about how to police the internet to deal with now what appears to be another way that hackers can sort of get people online, and another thing that folks have to be worried about? Not that we're all famous actors and actresses here, but still.
Sure. I tiptoe carefully around the term hate crime. For example, there was that whole fuss about what happened to Leslie Jones on Twitter, where people were piling on and saying horribly insulting things about her. I don't think anything there was a hate crime. They didn't do anything illegal. It was just vulgar and disgusting. But when you break into somebody's website, that's a federal crime. And so in this case, I think you could fairly call it a hate crime. And there doesn't seem to be any motivation other than the fact that they just plain hate this particular woman for reasons that are impenetrable to me. I can't think what it is. But if there's one thing we know for a certainty, it is that there's no safe space on the internet. This kind of thing in one form or another is going to happen on the internet, and you can't entirely control it.
I want to switch gears for a minute here. I want to talk about your column today about economist Kenneth Rogoff's new book, The Curse of Cash. And he's saying, you know, talking about a fully cash-free society, plastic only. Your thoughts?
Well, not just plastic only, but also smartphone. You can use your smartphone to pay for things and so on. I think we're going that way. I don't think we're going to go to complete cashlessness. And even Rogoff says that he favors, you know, a few small bills that we would keep around. He makes a very strong case that most of the large denomination money in the world is being used by drug dealers and terrorists anyway, and we could live without it. And in fact, how many of us use large bills? Very few of us. But on the other hand, the loss of cash would also mean the loss of the ability to do private economic transactions that are perfectly legitimate. And I don't want to go that far. I really don't. I would love to dream of something like, say, some of us dream of something like Bitcoin that would allow us to do that. But it turns out Bitcoin isn't anonymous. People have committed crimes and used Bitcoin and thought they could get away with it. And they're all sitting in federal prison right now because Bitcoin can be traced. Nobody's figured out a way to do a digital currency that cannot be traced. And if they did that, then I might be able to go completely cashless and feel good about it. But otherwise, yeah, it kind of creeps me out because I want to be able to buy something and not have the government know I bought it.
But also not be tracked by marketers who are going to then try to sell you everything.
Exactly.
It's not just the government.
Exactly.
It's also businesses who are doing
this.
And there may be people who want to opt out of this so they're not targeted.
Absolutely. And cash has that one great blessing. It allows you to basically continue to take part in the economy of the country or of the world, while at the same time opting out of this panopticon of total surveillance. That's why a lot of us still would like to see cash floating around. But then I look at my own life and I suddenly realize, except for the occasional cup of coffee, I don't think I spend cash in a week. It's amazing to me how little cash I use. I use Apple Pay, I have Samsung Pay, and I have a piece of plastic. And that's it. And it works.
Watch out, the hackers might be listening. Anyway, earlier this month, Hiawatha, the Globe wrote about places that don't accept cash, even though that's illegal. Legal in Massachusetts, which most people didn't know, apparently. You know, we know the MBTA says it wants to phase out paying with cash. We're going to have electronic tolling only on the Mass Pike starting in October. The other question about all of this cashless economy is, isn't that a hardship for some folks who don't have smartphones and Apple Pay and plastic?
Yep.
And so
what do you do about that? Well, again,
Dr.
Rogoff does talk about that in his book, and he says that it may be necessary to create special kinds of, for example, prepaid cash cards or cash cards that lower income people can use to translate their income into plastic so that they don't have to carry cash. Another interesting thing is this is something we don't have in the U.S. Tap and go cards for very small purchases are very popular in the rest of the world. They usually have a limit of $20 to $50. It's a plastic card. You buy like a bottle of soda. You walk up, you tap the card, and it's paid. And that's all you do. It's for very small purchases.
And it doesn't track you.
Well, that's the problem. Like with all these other things we're talking about with cashless, of course it tracks you. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It does track you. But that's true of any of these cashless technologies we currently have. There is no cashless technology currently available to us that makes us invisible. Even Bitcoin can be tracked. And that's the problem, and that privacy aspect of it is a real hassle.
Do you think we'll see the law change in Massachusetts about not accepting cash?
It could. I wouldn't rule it out. I'm not sure you need a law, though. To tell the truth, though, I'm not sure you need a law because you're going to see so few people. I mean, excuse me, I should say so many people moving toward things like all plastic, all smartphone. We may see the return of the tap-to-pay credit card, that it's already happening. Something like only 24% of Americans now use mostly cash. It was 36% just 5 years ago. The number of us who use cash is plummeting. So this is just like they're going to meet halfway.
All right. Hiawatha Bray, technology writer for the business section of the Boston Globe. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Hey, it's been fun.